for breakfast today?
What did I have for breakfast today? I didn't have anything for breakfast today. I had just had my, what was that, a little protein bar.
That's all. The one that you
just ate. Yeah, that's it. That's all I had. And I had a cup of tea.
Oh, man. So you're kind of hungry.
Oh, no, I'm starving. Oh, no, I'm good. No, I'm hungry, but it's okay. There just wasn't time this morning.
Okay.
I had just the tea. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. And I have been digging into your work a little bit. And, you know, the images are really compelling. And it was great to hear your presentation this morning. And what I'm curious about a lot of things, but I don't have a lot of time with you, and I want to try to keep it focused. But one thing I am curious about, you know, this started with albinism, and now it's expanded your work.
Mm-hmm.
Positive exposure.
Yes.
And you're traveling all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm aware that ideas about beauty and body image vary from place to place.
Absolutely.
And I'm wondering if you could share a little bit about what you're learning about that as you take this work to different places.
Well, I'm looking at industry standard or standards of beauty in each community. That does vary. But I think the human soul, and not inner beauty at all, but I think wants to revel in beauty. And we're forced to look at beauty by magazines, by family pressure, by community peer pressure as well, to look at beauty as being a very specific icon, that iconization. But in reality, beauty is there. It exists. As an artist, I take the responsibility to see the beauty that I absorb, to translate that, and bring it back to show it in a way that somebody else can grasp that concept of beauty and look beyond their own restrictions or limitations of what they believe the beauty standard is. So that's what I do. So as I go to various communities, beauty, no matter whether it's people are lightening their skin in Africa or darkening their skin or tanning in California, it varies, but the difference is, and the similarity is similarity, is that the people have so much consistency in what is beautiful, and will see beauty in a lover's gaze or in a child's sparkle, or that's where beauty exists. And I translate beauty in that language and take it out of what we see as just the physical beauty. People always say to me, oh, Rick, you've captured her inner beauty. I'm like, oh, please, inner beauty. This is beauty. This is the real deal. This is not about inner beauty. These kids are gorgeous, and you see the beauty there. Exists. We just haven't been allowed to see it, that's all.
There was this one quote that I saw in your materials, they made me believe different was
ugly. Yeah.
I was wondering if you could tell the story behind that quote.
Sure, it was a woman that I worked with early days and with Positive Exposure, when I first started Positive Exposure, prior to shooting for Life Magazine. We began shooting the photographs before I presented them to Life Magazine. And one of the women that I photographed was actually a beautiful woman. She's probably in her early 40s. We talked about, I wanted to have more information, because at first I was just doing a fashion shoot. I was looking at difference and let's show the world, and it was a beauty shoot. Let's show the beauty of albinism. But as I started meeting these kids and these people, I started hearing these horror stories. I had one woman say, I went to the doctor with my son, Zach, and the doctor took one look at Zach and said, well, you better not have any more children. You might have another one of those in front of this kid. She's like, I have another one of those, and he's just as perfect. He doesn't have albinism, but he's just as perfect. So I started hearing these things, and it was starting to grab me more and more by the heart. And I thought, there's such more of a social significance here. So instead of putting it in a fashion magazine like Detour or Surface, like I was going to, I brought it to Life Magazine, and they ran it instantly. But I started asking more and more quotes about, can we shut that door? Thanks. It's okay. What do you need? And did I get my DVD back from you guys? Okay, thanks. Her name was Charlotte, and she said, I asked her to give me some ideas, talk to me about her childhood, what it was like having albinism, just to share this information with the public. Just change them. So I was shocked that I heard about all this discrimination and stigma. I had no idea. I thought, you're gorgeous. What are you talking about? And then I started, she said, I think of my childhood, and I look at my parents who opted to have only one child. I looked, and my whole life in school made me believe, because I was different, I was ugly. It's a 40-year-old woman.
Is that the woman who led the life
magazine? She started, that's Charlotte. She didn't want anything to do with it. But of course, I was kidding. She actually became a really big fan. She came to the first shoot for these other kids, and she saw what was going on. And she saw not just that we were really, my intention was to show a beautiful presentation of albinism, but also she saw and I saw how this was affecting a kid who had been told, no, you don't belong. Stand back in the shadows. Get away from me. And then say, no, come here, in the spotlight, on that table, sing as loud as you can. And they just, it was extraordinary.
I am really curious about what in your own life experience and story makes you resonate so much and be such a champion of, I want to get more people at the table here in terms of expanding how what you perceive to be beautiful.
You know, I don't know, and I certainly don't have any genetics genetic syndrome. Kids living with, or any family members that have a genetic syndrome close to me. I think it was really just more working in the fashion industry for as long as I was in training to understand, to see, and to regurgitate beauty. And when I finally realized, when I finally began to, as an artist, and I moved to Italy, I lived in Europe for about 7 years, and spent more time in the dark room printing and manipulating with solarization imagery and things like that in the black and white darkroom, got more in touch with who I was as an artist. And then I realized that I was being back in the fashion industry in the U.S. And around the world as well, I felt that I was not allowed to follow my instincts, but I had already developed a strong trust in my instincts. And it wasn't until I passed that girl on the bus, waiting at the bus stop, that I realized that it hit me, that I was ready to see beauty outside of my own world. And I could have passed that kid every day for years. She went to school in the neighborhood, so she was probably standing at that bus stop the same time she was 12 years old. So it was like, 6 years? So, and I never saw her until I was ready, most likely. And then there she was. Nothing as a child, but I've always been. It's not so my parents grew. I mean, but it was just my parents kind of fed this to me. It's about justice. I mean, I am a Libra, so that, and I really do see both sides of every story. But I have a tremendous affiliation for. It drives me crazy when something's unfair, and when there's something unjust or there's a stigma or discrimination or prejudice, and that's always fueled my life. I've always been very the outspoken one when somebody was getting bullied or teased, or I was always the one to say no, we can't do this, but never as an advocate. It was just always just with a group of friends. I never would see myself. I was a fashion photographer. I would never see myself speaking to med students, you know, or come to conferences like this. And also nothing, no one particular thing, but I think several layers. And over time, as I said earlier today, we were talking a couple of incidences once early on in this project, because I was not planning on changing my life. I was planning on being a fashion photographer. That's what I was doing always. But it was like working at a conference in the UK where I met this young woman who did not want to be photographed. It was an albinism conference, the Albinism Fellowship Conference. She was 15, Christine. Wasn't the same Christine. It was a different Christina with the one that photograph. Realized she's not in that presentation. She's in other ones. Christina Venning is her name. She's a gorgeous kid. But she did not want to be photographed. And all of her friends at this conference explained to me why she didn't want to be photographed, that she had been teased and bullied, not just by her peers and students in school, but even teachers made fun of her. Incensed. I was furious. It just makes me crazy. But of course, you know, I'm a pain in the neck, and I tortured her until she let me take her photographs, and she did, and we had such a great time. We took lots of photographs. We had a blast. Photographs are gorgeous, and she was a blast, and she's really funny and smart, and at the end of it, she said, you know, I realize I could be proud of my albinism right now. She said, I do realize, though, that the hatred and the abuse that I experience every single day will never disappear, but what has disappeared is the hatred that I felt for myself. And I thought, damn, you know, like, wow, my God, this is extraordinary. And it just blew me away. Another experience early on in this, and I can bang on about this for hours if you want, but I also understanding my own prejudices and seeing my own discrimination. I was actually asked by a couple of families in the Lancaster part of region of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, with the Amish. There's a condition called glutaric acidemia, and these kids have a reaction to a protein. So when they go, when they're born, go to mother's milk, they kind of have a seizure. It can be very, very damaged. Their bodies get really affected by this. Some of these kids die. Some of them are, you know, wheelchair bound, early and always. This is even before Life magazine, and that I started working with. In the night. I lie. This is, I received the Art of Reporting Award by the Genetic Alliance right after Life magazine came out, and I met this woman who was the president of this foundation. And she said, you're not going to be able to work with these kids. You're not going to be able to, it's going to be very difficult to photograph these kids outside because they're in wheelchair bounds, but they're like homemade wheelchairs, things like that. And she said, because it's Amish families. But I would like you to meet these kids so you can photograph them, but you're going to have to be approved by the board. And I did. And this is a long story. I don't know if you have time for this. But so I went, and because they wanted to, because the World Health Organization recognized that if you, in newborn screening, they could see this condition that you carry, this aversion to overduction of proteins. Change your milk, your formula, and then your body readjusts itself. A worst case scenario, you kind of have to take care of yourself and just have to be cautious. So I thought, okay. But she said, but now the Amish people don't follow those rules, and they're asking to get a permit, a building permit, to build their own kind of testing facility. And I was like, medical facility. I was like, sure. And she said, and your photographs can help. So would you please go and meet these families? I have to approve you to be photograph these kids in this house, but could you go? And I said, sure. And I walked in, and there, all the kids were lying on the floor, and I made the presentation to the elders, and kids were sitting on the floor. So they went into the room, shut the doors, and then I was there with the kids, and they gave me this little battery-operated handheld thing. And there was a little boy who was like all twisted over this, who had this condition, but he was just not in the room, kind of like drooling and just kind of there. And so I was playing with the kids and had my back to this kid. And I was a little tic-tac-toe machine that was battery operated of levels 1 to 5, and it was on 5 and it kept beating me. And I was like, oh, and the kids were laughing, and I was like, oh, and the kids are laughing. And all of a sudden Alvin was his name, started having a seizure, and I thought, ah, and I didn't know what to do. So I not knowing anything about health, I mean, I'm a school of visual art major, and arts major. So I handed him this bright yellow object that I had in my hand, and he threw it right back at me and started really having a seizure. And I glanced at it, and he changed the level from 5 to 1. So he wasn't having a seizure. He was laughing, and he was a smart little kid in that body. You know, and I just didn't think he was there because it was just like, oh, he felt kind of bad and kind of it was uncomfortable. So, of course, needless to say, he lived here for the next 3 days, and we did all the photographs, and it was good, but he's extraordinary. But I, you know, here I am thinking I'm so open-minded, but you still have your own prejudices and your fears. So that I realized that that's also something I needed to address, and I'll do that with, because I think as an artist, it's my responsibility to steady your gaze and your head to make you look, see, and revel and applaud what you see.
I wanted to have you speak to a few images. Okay. As I mentioned, we're hoping to take some images and match them with audio.
Okay. Okay.
Talking about them, and some of them I have here, and some of them I made notes from.
Okay.
Your presentation.
Okay. Oh, it's a beautiful. These are Isabelle and Bernard. They're from France, and Isabelle was born with a condition called anophthalmia. She was born without eyes, and that's her little brother, who just says that he's her eyes and he'll be her eyes. But this little girl was so beautiful and saw more than I see. she sees with her fingers and her ears and her touch, and she just moves around and just kind of, she's very, very mobile and very, very opinionated. And just a lovely, lovely young woman who you would look and think, oh, she's born without eyes and she's going to have such difficulty, and you see pity and sympathy, and you're, the kid's going to be president one day. I have a feeling.
How did you come to photograph her?
I was invited to, I went and spoke at the Anophthalmia Columboma Conference. It was called ICANN, the International Columboma Anophthalmia Conference. It's ICANN. conference. It was, I think it was, I forget where it was. I may have been in Houston, I think, or Children's Hospital. But I go to conferences all over the country, actually all over the world, all the time, working hands-on with the families and kids and adults living with a variety of conditions. There's there are organizations called like the Genetic Alliance, and all their support organizations are these nonprofit organizations that are formed to support families, provide information, and to change and raise public awareness about what a specific condition is, and also to seek research, and also the physicians that will do research. So I did that nonstop. This is from the myotubular myopathy. This is a little girl by the name of Rusty. These are her shoes, and she's just so stunning. I'm pretty sure this is myotubular myopathy. Yeah, because it's Ben. Ben was there too. Very interesting story. I went to, I was at Texas Children's Hospital. I had an exhibition there, and this woman came by. She was there with her son, and she walked out, and the exhibition was set up in this causeway, in this kind of walkway. And it's actually up on the website. You can see the thing, the exhibition. And it was the first time I exhibited in the Children's Hospital, and I realized, oh, man, it really belongs here. Because this woman came up to me. She walked up behind me, threw her arms around me, and just said, I just came from six different examinations with my son, Ben, and he failed everything. His breathing wasn't good. His lung capacity is disintegrating. This is that. He's not growing. That's below normal. This is below average. This is not, doesn't, it's non-compliant. She said, I just want to go throw myself off the top of the building. And she said, I walk out, and I'm instantly surrounded by these beautiful kids, all with challenges, but they're all kids first and foremost. And that's my Ben. So she said, now, we've his photograph is in the slideshow. And he has, like, feeding tubes, and he has all kinds of breathing apparatus. He's just completely challenged and all tied up to these machines. She said, we've never had a family conference because it's too difficult for our families to travel. But it's just like a lot of effort. But if we can use you as the calling card, that you're going to be there with your camera, do a presentation, photograph these kids, maybe they'll come. Can we use you? Can we? And I said, absolutely. And she did. And we did it. It was last year. 40 families came. And this young woman, Rusty, was there as well. And these are the fanciest shoes I've ever seen, ever. And I kept taking them on her feet and putting them on my feet. I've had them on my feet most of the weekend. She kept screaming at me. Really fabulous kid. It's myotubular myopathy. There's a whole. I try to stay out of the science. A lot of breathing problems, a lot of the muscle control, a lot of mobility issues, tremendous mobility issues, but even the muscle to the point where these kids can't even breathe without a ventricle as well. So it's just a lot of problems. So, but gorgeous, gorgeous, stunning, 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 stunning kids. Oh my goodness, you're really pulling these out. This came off of my site from probably I think it's Smith McGinnis. Did you write on the back of these?
I didn't know.
I think it's Smith McGinnis Conference. Smith McGinnis is it Smith McGinnis or could it be isodicentric chromosome 15? I think it's isodicentric. This is a young woman. I have to tell you, I don't remember her name. I think her name is Anita. I'm pretty sure, but this is a photograph that was taken in 2002, so it's an old one. It's been up on my site for a while. That's her dad, there are a lot of, she has some heart anomalies, some learning issues, some certain challenges, but just the most glorious young woman, and I'll never forget her, and I'll never forget her dad, who when we started taking photographs of her, was just beaming. Beaming that there was somebody there that saw what he sees when he looks at his gorgeous daughter.
Now I've read a lot, and you talked about the work that you've been doing in Africa.
Okay.
And particularly around albinism.
Sure.
Tell me a little bit about what we see in this image.
My great friend Siri. I was in West Africa, in Mali here at the time. Siri was. There's a tremendous superstition, discrimination based on kids, people living with albinism in Africa. Also high incidence of mortality associated to skin cancers. And when this young woman was born, Siri was born, the father's family saw it as a curse to the family. So they got the mother and Siri and they threw her out of the house saying, you don't belong here. You're not part of this family. She's not one of us. She's cursed. The mom, not knowing what else to do, put Siri and the son. It's okay. I think you have to set up in here, yes? Put Siri in the sun to get her dark, thinking that would make her dark like her brothers and sisters, and therefore welcome back into the community. And all it did was created skin cancer. So.
And how is your work around photographing people? having an impact on the bigger community beyond the individual.
It's the utilizing the visual arts again to show the world the beauty of albinism, going to these communities and showing albinism worldwide where they're discriminated against and people think it's a curse, to show the doctors, the dancers, the journalists, the politicians with albinism worldwide, to show that they're not alone in that community, not isolated in that community, and not a curse to that community or household, but actually a person who has a lot to offer, brother, sister, friend, spouse, whatever, and utilizing those images worldwide to change public awareness and, again, to look at the universal applicability here, seeing the albinism as metaphor only, but to address all issues of diversity, discrimination, prejudice. World wars are started and finished on intolerance, so it's really about teaching tolerance with the visual arts.
There's a couple more images. I wrote down the names of the people.
Okay.
Kaylin
with Sturge Weber. Kaylin, yeah, Kaylin's fantastic.
What struck me about her story is how it seems as though it's gone beyond her own self-image being transformed, and now she's working in her community. So I'm wondering if you could tell
sure.
that bit about her and
sure.
how
well,
she's been impacted.
With kids, did you want to know the whole story? You want to hear it again? Okay. Well, Kaylin actually has Sturge Weber, which means she was born with a birthmark bilaterally across her face, has it internally, has seizures, lost her vision in her left eye, is losing her vision in her right eye due to glaucoma, which is associated with Sturge Weber. And she came into my studio. We had so much fun taking photos. She was 14. We had a blast shooting. She was just bouncing off the ceiling. She was just fantastic. Her mother, at the end of the shoot, though, called me and said, you know, Kaylin never talks to me about school. Because she knows that if her kids are teasing her, I'm going to come in screaming and yelling. And that just makes things even worse for her. Kids like really start teasing her or bullying her when her mother leaves. So to protect herself, Kaylin says nothing. But on their way home from my studio, Kaylin said to her mom, the kids tell me I'm ugly every day. They tell me I'm a freak and I'm a monster. And I believe them until today. And then she mobilized and she got me to go to her school, which is in New Jersey, to speak to 400 freshman students. And she was my co-speaker, running around on stage screaming, what is normal? So she created this equation that is now very much part of our whole curriculum development initiatives. Our curriculum development initiatives it's an equation that self-acceptance equals self-esteem equals self-advocacy. It's really creating little twisters and storms to change the way people see difference within communities, schools, starting at what your community that you see every day to take them out, looking for a youth board, developing a board of kids that are advocates, ambassadors to change the way communities see them by giving them and providing our tools to mobilize them and to motivate them to that, and also to enable them to change the way their community sees them, and then also to see other kids with difference, to readdress the language of diversity. Because it's so often just regurgitated, again, like beauty is. We just, it's almost like it's just, they're just words unless you really understand diversity. To develop more, I see positive exposure being in every curriculum worldwide. It needs to be. I think we need to address issues of diversity everywhere, but utilizing kids with very specific genetic conditions, but really to kind of look further and beyond that, to look at, again, at the universal message that we're all different. It's about all of our differences, and we're all part of this community of genetics. But we're doing a documentary at the moment, a book, website and a traveling exhibition to reach as many people as we can, not in the fancy art galleries and not in the fancy or at the genetic conferences, but in public forums, airports, Grand Central Station. It should be everywhere. It has to be in a language that we know we understand. I had a 7-year-old kid say to me recently that, I was just sitting in the kitchen and my mom burnt toast. And she's like, oh, it stinks. Oh, it really stinks. He said, so now with that smell, I think of it, it stinks. But he said, it doesn't really stick, and I think it's time we start thinking for ourselves. He's 8. I'm like, okay, I get it. We got to start. People have got to must learn to be aware and to be more aware of not this. I've walked down the street with kids with parents and their children in wheelchairs or in carriages that are on feeding tubes or oxygen, and people will run, oh, let me see the baby, and they look at the kid, and the first thing they say is, oh, I'm so sorry. don't be sorry. This baby's fabulous. It's like the best you can. Another woman said, you know, a woman who has a child with arthrogryposis multiplex congenita, a lot of mobility issues. She said, you know, my best friend, we went to Yale together, smart, educated woman, said to me, well, if anybody can handle this challenge, it's you. She said, I'm going to kill her. Yeah. I'm sorry. It wasn't even that. If anybody can make lemonade out of lemons, that's the quote. Sorry. She said, so he's a lemon? Like, what? So there you go.
We just interviewed for our show. I'll send you a CD. It's the newest show that's coming up this weekend. Desmond Tutu.
Oh, great.
And one of the things that strikes me in that conversation that connects to your work, he talks about how under apartheid, he would tell his parishioners, you're a God carrier. You were made in God's image. And living under apartheid, where constantly messaging and experiences around your inferiority, to walk out of church, you know, I am made in the image of God. I am a God carrier. And it just strikes me that you're holding up a mirror to people that helps them to see the
beauty. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's kind of, you know, because being in some really difficult situations in Africa, certainly, especially in Tanzania, where witch doctors, not traditional healers, but witch doctors are chopping legs off of kids and saying that, you know, the bones of an albino will make you rich. So where they're murdering these kids, and you feel so, like, where is God? You know, what's going on here? Why isn't he here? And then you go, and there's a photograph, so with a bunch of kids walking from Mwanza. And I went there, and these kids were singing. They were there, and they were all in hiding at this school. And I looked in their eyes, and all you saw was hope. And he's like, well, oh, there he is. And he's in every sparkle in their eyes, every single sparkle. And the fact that fear is gone, that's where he's where he's supposed to be. You know, it's exactly where he's supposed to be.
Tanzania
and Mwanza, which is the lake region where many of the murders have taken place.
And this is a school for
the Nintendo school for
the. Are those the children we saw in the video?
No, that was the Sibinia. This is actually not a school for the blind. This is actually a school for many many children, children of all abilities. The Sibinile school in the video, that's the school for the blind in Johannesburg.
So these children here are attending school with kids who have albinism and who don't have
albinism. Absolutely, yes. I think that's pretty much it. I mean, our website, positiveexposure.org, of course.
That's spirituality, beauty.
Well, you know, isn't it? It's all kind of this. It's all on the same table, really. You know, it's spirituality is and self esteem and beauty. They're all things that everybody has an opinion about, and it's so rare that we're allowed, because the commercialism kind of changes everything, kind of forms those opinions for us, tells us what we're supposed to be thinking, how we're supposed to be thinking, and when we're supposed to be thinking those things. And to follow instincts and to really trust your own instincts and to follow your own guidance, your rules of beauty, you know, that just let them go, because beauty exists everywhere. As an artist, that's all I see. You know, and beauty everywhere. It has to be embraced.
Before we wrap, I'd just like you to say your name, to introduce yourself.
Sure. I'm Rick Guidotti. I'm the director and founder of Positive Exposure, and I'm based in New York City.
And if you could just say a sentence or two about what Positive Exposure
is. Sure. Positive Exposure is an organization utilizing photographs and visual imagery to and media, of course, all media, multimedia programs, to challenge stigma and celebrate the beauty and richness of human diversity, to utilizing the images to change the way a person sees themselves, and then enable and empower and mobilize that person to then become an advocate for themselves, and also to change the way community sees their difference and become an ambassador for change, to change public perceptions and attitude toward all differences worldwide.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks. Thanks for coming. Okay. I talk too much.
No.
Blah, 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 blah. Thanks for that. What else? What other photographs did you get?
Yeah.
I learned her shoes the best. Her dad.